The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain podcast on ESPN Radio.
How can a man like Drew Brees, how can a man who's given so much, not just in money, but in time, to so many, be canceled? Yes, of course, by a monolithic sports media that knows only one thought. But by his teammates, by his colleagues. How can actions mean so little and parroting mean so much? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation in one of the few places left to do that. At 888-729-3776 on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. I'll get to your calls of disagreement coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But I could not be more discouraged. Earlier in the show, I used words like embarrassed. Perhaps best said, I am appalled. And not just the state of sports, sports media, media at large, but our society. I was raised to believe a man's deeds spoke louder than his words, and I was raised to believe that character is how you measured a man, not by the level of his agreement with your preconceived notions. And I have never felt more pessimistic that we will find solutions in this country because we can't even find dialogue. Oh, we talk about it. We lie about it, about having a conversation. But more and more, I see transparently that it is a lie, and I couldn't be more disappointed. It's not how I built my career nor my personal life. I do want to know opposing points of view. I do want to know points of view that I could be blind to. I don't think he'll mind, so I will tell you his name. I called Marcus Spears this morning and I said, Marcus, I cannot believe this. And we talked through it, and maybe we will. We talked about doing it on a podcast or on an Instagram Live. Doing something that's rare, and maybe, just maybe, not just rare, but maybe actually a cancelable event. We talked about having a conversation of two people with two points of view that diverge to some extent. I don't know, it could be too sacrilege, it could be too dangerous to do that. But we did talk privately, and I hope that doesn't make him feel like he's in an uncomfortable position. Because what you're supposed to do is demand unanimity, demand agreement. T's crossed, I's dotted. Help me out with this, because this is sort of the messages that have been communicated over the last week and a half, where we start in total agreement on a very serious issue, police misconduct in Minneapolis, Minnesota, whether or not Derek Chauvin should be charged with murder. And we arrive at an agreement. We talked about it here on the Will Cain Show, second-degree murder. That's what fits the charge. And is now what is being pursued in Minnesota. And we move the conversation to talking about something that I think a majority do agree on, that there is police brutality in the United States of America. We need to have real, honest conversations about how pervasive it is, what the statistics tell us, at low levels, at high levels. Does it reflect in low-level interactions? Is it pervasive at high-level interactions, like the killing of unarmed black men? I've talked through this week with you the statistics on that, but they do not deny personal experience, and they do not deny the existence of racism in this country. But the conversation moves on from there. And since then, these are the types of things I have seen communicated. It was a joke earlier in the week. Many people said, would you please quit texting your black friend? They're exhausted at you checking in to see if they're okay. But then that was followed quickly by, you should post something on Instagram, Blackout Tuesday, to show everybody that you're cool, that you believe in the universal virtue of anti-racism. So do it, so everybody else can see that you are virtuous. But don't say anything, because that's the point of Blackout Tuesday. Don't say anything, but wait a minute, the New York Knicks didn't say anything, and the New York Knicks, therefore, were unvirtuous. They were wrong. They should be canceled because they didn't put out a statement. But Dabo Swinney did put out a statement, but his was too generic and relied on faith, so Dabo's wasn't good, so drag Dabo Swinney. Other teams also put some out, but some of them declined to use words like systemic racism, so we're narrowing down what must be done here. It must be said exactly right, otherwise your team does not mean it, and you don't get it. And then Drew Brees, who said he does get the situation and does seek to improve our society, on the basis of race, said he simply did not like or did not agree with kneeling during the national anthem. Drag him. Cancel him. He did not cross his T. He did not dot his I. Police who are kneeling to protesters, they're being celebrated, so that seems to be the right message to send. And later, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, I believe he did that as well. He knelt before protesters, so that seems to be the appropriate message to communicate. As we go, I understand it says, at times silence is good, and at times silence isn't enough. Statements are good, but statements have to be said just right. Drew Brees didn't say his statement exactly correct, even if he gets the underlying issue. And even if he's a man of action who gives his time and his money to making this world a better place, he must be canceled. F Drew Brees, let the chants ring out on the streets of New Orleans. Ultimately, what's best to be done is just kneel. Just kneel. Before protesters, before the flag, just kneel, just parrot. Don't work through this together. Don't talk, don't communicate, don't dialogue. Don't dare disagree. Don't even agree. Stay silent, kneel, or parrot. Exactly what must be communicated. It's a road to nowhere. Dexter from Arizona, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Mr. Cain. Yeah, Dexter Reese. I just wanted to start by saying, like, I do listen to your show, like, every day. And basically, you started off the show, and I understand, like, acknowledging what Drew Brees has did that is commendable. And I was kind of in a situation like you maybe a couple of months ago where it was this gentleman who I knew, and he had basically did so much for a church, like, so much. He basically kept the church up all on his own, honestly. And I guess he ran low on money, and he ended up taking some money one day, and I guess once he got the money of his own, he forgot to put it back. And he ended up losing, like getting basically dismissed from the church. And so basically, I was infuriated. I was like, what about all the good that he's done? Like, and basically, my mother, who basically had the, because she goes to the church, she basically just told me, she was like, that one incident is how you can be remembered or how you can be looked at. And I thought it was horrible, but I'm just like, I get it. You know what I'm saying? Drew Brees, in no way, and I'm an African-American, 25-year-old African-American male, no way do I think that he is racist or anything like that. But I've come to
Drew Brees or the man from your church?
Drew Brees. Right. Like, the man from my church, I still think he's a good man. He took the money, and he shouldn't have took money from the church without asking. But in no way am I comparing these two scenarios, but it's just basically like, I'd have no reason to believe that Drew Brees is a racist. Like, But it's just that one incident, a lot of people was expecting Drew Brees to understand. Like, at this, but me, as like, I'm young, and I've come to the acknowledgement that it's going to be hard for anybody to understand anything that you don't go through. Like, we want Drew Brees to see that kneeling is not about, like, the military to us, because it's not. We see being oppressed in America. That's exactly what we see. You know what I'm saying? Like, Drew Brees doesn't have to wake up. And his son's probably around. I have a son who's 8 years old, and I've been, like, talking to my people, like, how do I teach him how to survive when he comes across some people who are supposed to protect him? I shouldn't have to. Like, being a privileged Caucasian man, you know, basically, you don't have to go through that conversation. Like, when I was taught at a young age, as soon as you're pulled over, just call my mother. Like, put her on speakerphone. And then so she can just hear the interaction with the cop to see what's really going on. You know what I'm saying? So I come to acknowledgement, if you don't grow up in that situation and you're maybe like shielded from certain situations, and that's just not Caucasians and African Americans. I'm shielded from certain environments of other African Americans that I can't understand. So if you can't understand it, it's going to be hard to like expect somebody to do exactly what you want them to do. I think it's more about understanding. And just one more thing, Mr. Cain, and I'll get off. I really agreed with you when you said, I talked about it comes from an individual standpoint in changing the world. I believe police brutality as a whole, maybe laws can be passed, maybe things can happen to where it's like something be done as a police staff as a whole. But when it comes to racism, I honestly feel that will never change in this world because that is an individual thing. Like prejudice and racism is uprooted in the heart. Like that's in people's individual heart. So until they... It's so many people in the world who are prejudiced and racist. Not everybody's going to uproot in their heart. So to the end of the world, we will always do racism because individually, not everybody is going to be able or be willing to search their self inside and make a change. And I appreciate your show. I appreciate your viewpoints. I mean, it's a great show to listen to, and I just appreciate how you listen. You listen. Whether it changed your viewpoint, whatever, you listen. And I just thank you.
Thank you, Dexter. And I appreciate you sharing that with us. I know it's real. I know what you described. I know the conversation you have to have with your son is real. I had a conversation again with Marcus Spears about the difference between understanding and empathizing. And I get that as well. Meaning Marcus said, understanding is one thing, Will, but empathizing is another. And I thought that was really smart. And I get it. And your experience is real. And it needs to be not just understood, but empathized with, Dexter. But what I would say as well is whether or not we're talking about Drew Brees or the man from your church, we have to do a couple of things. Yes, understand as a personal lesson that you could tarnish a reputation with one bad act. It's 100% true. But you also have to factor in scale. What is the act? In Drew Brees' case, it's been tens of $50 million contributed to people of all walks of life to making their life better versus a statement that wasn't in lockstep with what people require in 2020. We have to have forgiveness in our heart as well. And I think, as Tim Hasselbeck pointed out earlier, that DeMario Davis, Brees' teammate, had that. Did he need it to be forgiven? I think that's a different conversation. Because I think we should be allowed to disagree. I think we should be allowed to see symbols differently. And ultimately, I would ask this in the end, Dexter, and if you were on the line, I would have asked you this. Is it more important to agree with the form of the protest or the underlying issues and the goals of improving the society? You may disagree with Drew Brees' view of kneeling before the flag, but do you disagree with him on making this world a better place at the underlying level? We'll continue this conversation. Again, the phone lines are lit up, and it's an open forum. That plus, let's get an update on the NBA because the season's coming back, and Bobby Marks is going to help us out with what it's going to look like. That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We got some heavy conversations on this show, not many other places. Real conversations, you know, with diverging points of view and a respectful back and forth. We'll have some more of that coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. But let's take a quick detour because the NBA's Board of Governors and owners voted on a return to the 2020 season. Let's get the details on what that could look like with our NBA front office insider, Bobby Marks. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, Will. How are you?
I'm good. So, is it, forgive me for, I've had some distractions over the last 24 hours in terms of the news cycle. We've been engulfed essentially by Drew Brees controversy. But yesterday when I left off, Bobby, it looked like the proposal would be 8-game regular season and 22 teams into the playoffs. Is that what we have decided to move forward with the NBA in 2020?
Yep, that's where we are. We'll get going in at the end of July here with 22 teams, 8 games. If you are the ninth place team when this ends and you are 4 games or less, there'll be a play-in game versus the 8th seed. The 8th seed would only have to win 1 game. The 9th seed would have to win 2 games to advance to the playoffs there.
And of the 22 teams that will play out, and I'm using air quotations here, the regular season, it's 13 from the West and 9 from the East. Is that based upon who has an actual shot at making the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, what the league did was they looked at how many games back teams were at in mid-March, and they went back in history and realized that 6 games was, the most that a team has ever come back at that point in the season to make the playoffs, and they drew a kind of a line in the sand, and teams like Phoenix and Washington just kind of made the cut line. So that's how the league took those 22 teams.
Okay, I had a couple of questions yesterday, Bobby, and I think these are – hopefully you have the answer to these because I think they're kind of big. So first, let's deal with this. Nobody or very few teams had played the equal number of games, or at least there were some that had very big – divergences in the number of the games played. I think yesterday I said the Trailblazers have played 66 and the Spurs have played 63. So if you're just tacking on 8 games, how does that work? Like, you got to play the same number of games to have an even playing field on winning percentage, right?
No, that's a great question, and that did not come out when the league sent out their statement today, and if there still hasn't been any information as far as if you had already played 65 games. Most teams have played 65 games at that point in the season, but there are teams that have played. I think the Lakers are at 63, and there's a couple that are 66, but you're right. I mean, what the league is going to do is they're going to take 8 games based on what of the rest of your schedule in mid-March, and those are the teams that you will play against here, but there hasn't been that formula yet. If we finish the regular season and, a team like Portland has played 72 games, but what happens if Memphis has only played 70 games, right? That there is a little bit of an imbalance there that I would think there's going to be some resolution probably in the next day as far as what those type of scenarios look like.
Yeah, that's a big deal, right? I mean, let's say the eighth seed, or it'd be an 8-9, so the real debate would be between a 9-10, right, in the West. Let's say the ninth seed ends up with, I don't know what their pace is right now, but 44 wins, right? But the 10th seed has 42 wins, but they'd played 2 less games. If I'm the 10th seed, I'm like, I want to see if those have been wins so that I'd be the ninth seed, you know? It's going to have to be evened out.
No, you're right. I mean, I think that is probably one of the big things that that certainly does have to get figured out here, because as you said, there is an imbalance as far as not everyone finished with 65 games played, when this thing stopped in mid-March here.
Right. Here's the other thing, Bobby, that I was questioning about yesterday. Strength of schedule. I took a look. I had ESPN Stats run this on who had the weakest strength of schedule going forward under the regular NBA season. And I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but I know the Pelicans had the weakest. I think the Lakers and Clippers had one of the 5 weakest schedules. So in other words, they would have benefited from weak competition that now is out of the league, at least some portion of that, right? The 22 through 30th team in the NBA is out. So they're going to have to re-engineer that schedule. And you would think in place of those bad teams, there will now be better teams. So what's
You hit it right on the head.
Yeah.
Right on the head.
What did I hit on the head?
Instead of playing Chicago, now you are going to play one of the 22 teams that are in Orlando, right? So
right.
16 of those were playoff teams here. So, yeah, what they'll do is they'll take the 17 remaining games and basically filter out the 8 teams that are sitting at home if they were on your schedule and either replace those with a playoff team or one of those 21 teams there, or they basically kind of jump to the jump to that next game. So if you didn't have the Lakers on your schedule, you might have them now. So you're right. I think New Orleans did have one of the softer schedules. I think Memphis had one of the harder schedules, which will probably still continue. But the Pelicans, I think, are a little bit at a disadvantage because of what they're going to be faced here.
Yeah, the weak guys are gone. You hope you got to play them in November, December, and January, because if not, they're gone. I mean, it's all going to be, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We got to get basketball back, and these are all problems. We got to overcome them. But, I mean, I do think, let's say you're a Pelicans fan or whoever it may be, you do have a little bit of a gripe. Like, I might have made the playoffs with my weak schedule and the number of games I need to play, but under this new format, I don't know if I will. I think you have been dealt a pretty raw hand. Not as raw as not having basketball back yet, though.
No, you're right. And the funny thing is, we're talking basketball today, but, this thing's not kicking off until the end of July. I mean, we still have 7 weeks, but at least we've got light at the end of the tunnel. We've got a format in place, and we've got some structure. And, yeah, at least we know that free agency will start, I guess, October 18th. And, a tentative date is December 1st to start this regular season, which – I tell you what, Will, if I am the players, I am not happy with that. I mean, I think I'm looking for a concession here that if you're a team like the Lakers or Milwaukee and you're finishing, game 7 on October 12th in Orlando and you'd already been there for 3 months, and then you got to turn around and start training camp on November 10th, I mean, that is that's a short window to get going here. But I guess the counter argument says, hey, these guys have been off for the last 3 months here, right? I mean, so, but it is, it's going to
We're losing Bobby. He's got a bad connection. We're coming to the end anyway. It's ESPN's NBA front office insider Bobby Marks here on the Will Cain Show. Appreciate you, Bobby. Just for what it's worth, it is the Pelicans, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Sixers that had some of the weakest schedules, would have had some of the weakest, softest schedules. Now they'll be replaced with better teams on those schedules. Plus, we're going to fit in the draft and free agency and the NBA finals all into a tight window there in October. All right, coming up, I'm going to open the conversation back up to us. Plus, I have more. I have a lot more on Drew Brees and the state of this country. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Hey, over the past week and a half, I have had several long-form conversations, most recently with Damian Woody, on all of these issues. Heavy, race, police, sports. You can go check them out. Those long-form interviews on demand, the Will Cain Podcast, brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. When you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, your next trip is closer than you think. What's in your wallet? I recognize that's one hell of a sales pitch. Heavy, race, society. What they are, though, is real and rare. And maybe, just maybe, even not allowed. Dangerous. That seems to be what is no longer allowed, what we're about to do on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Openly air disagreement with each other. Liz from New York. What's up, Liz? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I was just listening, and I feel like maybe the point that I didn't hear come through was the fact that, you know, people are saying, like, oh, if you're against these protesters being in the street and you're pro-peaceful protest, that's what taking a knee was about. And if, you know, that's not acceptable, then what is an acceptable form of protest? You know, it was never against the flag, it was against police brutality. And I just feel like I didn't hear that coming through. And I know at the end of the comments, it sounded like, you know, maybe there was frustration with, like, there not being a dialogue right now and feeling like you can't say the right thing. And I think there's another way to look at it, which is, what is this but a dialogue? You know, we're going to, like, try to support, try to do the right thing. We're not always going to get it right. And you have to listen to the people who are on the front lines, who are experiencing, like, police brutality and racism. And, you know, we have to listen to them when they say, like, hey, you're not quite getting it right. And, like, course correct and say, like, okay, it's a good faith effort to try your best. And part of that is admitting that you're wrong.
Okay. Liz, stay on the line. Okay. We'll have a conversation for a minute. Definitely. A smart conversation always begins on both sides with listening. One of my favorite things about doing First Take in retrospect and being on debate shows is you're not any good at it if you don't listen. You just take turns giving speeches. Listening is a part of any integral conversation, but listening is not dialogue. Dialogue not only implies, it necessitates a back and forth. So that's what it has to be, and it can't just be one of, yeah, you're right, and I hear you, and I agree. That's not dialogue. That's an echo chamber. So it doesn't need agreement. In fact, it's better when there is disagreement. In fact, that's the only way you actually work towards some kind of solution. But you ask a good question, and I empathize with the question. Is like, what is an acceptable form of protest? Look, I could understand someone from the black community or from the NFL just saying, look, you said you don't like this, you don't like this. Like, what is okay? What is okay, right? What I would say to that is, I'm not defining what is okay or not. That is not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is talking to you about how communication lands. So first of all, I think the protests going on the streets right now, like, the protests writ large are good forms of protest. I mean, there is a percentage that's obviously not looting, rioting, violence, destruction. Of course, that is not. It's actually extremely condemnable, and let's just take a moment to sit in that moment, because I did watch a cop killed the other night, or he was a retired cop who's a security guard, killed on a Facebook live stream, and let's just take a moment to say how horrendous that is. And if it makes it more meaningful, he's a human being. He also was African American. So, horrendous. But the protest, peacefully writ large, is a good form of protest. But now let's go back to the form of communication for a minute, Liz. Do you agree with me that you can intend to say something, but it doesn't land right, and you would have to consider the fact maybe you didn't communicate your message in the best way. Like, that's a possibility for married couples, for college students, for diverse people all talking to each other. Intention and reception can be divorced from each other, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Right. So what I'm telling you is, when you listen to a guy like Drew Brees or others, and I was certainly this way in 2016, and I still feel this way. I understand Colin Kaepernick's intention, but it doesn't divorce it from how it's received. In other words, this is a meaningful symbol. I know he does not mean to disrespect what's meaningful to me. I know that, but it still is. That's the thing. Now, we have to understand that with each other. Like, I'm going to have to understand that he does not mean anything to do with the military, and I do. And he doesn't mean anything specific about the flag. Well, he means something specific about police brutality, but he has to, or anyone who supports it has to understand, your communication is landing this way with a lot of people, like a lot. And you have to wonder
why.
Can
I ask you something, though? Can I ask you something? Do you think there's any responsibility on behalf of the receiver to educate themselves?
Of course, but that still doesn't mean
like,
we have to.
Maybe
like
the message is going over. But maybe the message is going over your head because
Hold
you don't.
That's
you
not
know,
fair.
You like a
no,
collective
Liz, that's
you, not
fair.
You personally.
But that's not fair.
How is that
Liz?
Not fair?
I'm going to tell you why. Because it presumes the person you're speaking to is too ignorant to keep up with your message. To say it's going over their head, it's possible to understand the underlying issues and also go, "Hey, I don't like that. The way that's this is the a hyperbolic." Analogy I always use, but I do think it helps. Okay, I don't know how long you've been listening, Liz. Clearly, the Catholic Church throughout the last who knows how long has had an issue with priests who've had molestation and pedophilia issues. Right? I think that's well known at this point. Right? And I think anybody
could sure.
say, that is freaking awful, and we need to do something about it. Right? But if you went in with the validity of that underlying point, one that many people agree with, and made your point of highlighting it and getting it attention by walking into a church and defacing a crucifix, you might not land that message correctly with your audience. No matter how much they educate themselves, no matter how much they understand what you're trying to say, no matter how intellectually they can say that's not what he intends, it's a very important symbol. And what I would say to you, outside of those religious symbols, the American flag is second to most people because of what it's come to mean to everyone.
I think a couple things. I think that you're talking about like two people coming to this conversation in a vacuum, you know, like no race, like no history of racism and slavery in America. And that's not the reality. You know, the reality is that like it's not equal. And like racism against Black people and police brutality against Black people is a problem that Black people face that white people don't face.
But why
and so
we
the price
it?
That we pay for that privilege.
Yes, Liz, I'm not dismissing any of that. By
say,
but I'm not dismissing any of that.
I just think if you say, you know, that the people who are angry, the people who are fighting, are the ones responsible for making sure their message is received properly, is to place no responsibility on the white listeners. And no. I also think when you're talking about, like, you know, desecrating a crucifix, you know, why might someone do something like that if they have tried the other channels? You know, a lot of what the organizers are saying are that, you know, we have tried to go and talk to the police chief. We have tried to go and like talk to the mayors. We have tried to talk to team owners and yet like nothing is happening. And so this is like an outburst of anger and frustration because all of the like existing routes have been fruitless.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I do understand that point. I do, Liz. I appreciate the call. I understand that frustration. I'm also telling you the other side is a reality. It is simply a reality, and it's not ignorance. It's not willful ignorance. It's not malevolence either. I do think a moral people could say we're simply disagreeing on this symbol and this moment, but we're not being a people of goodwill with each other right now. Instead, what we're doing is saying, if you do not march in lockstep with just not just my position, but my message, and my performative message, then you, like Drew Brees, are the problem. What a world where Drew Brees and what everything he's done in this society, done, not talked about, contributed, not just marched, given, not just taken, is the problem? I'm starting to think we're the problem. You think words are more valuable than actions? I think we have a deeper sickness, a deeper problem. I'll continue talking with you, though. 888-729-3776. I debated with the guys. Do we lighten it up for a minute? Do we play a game of butthurt? I don't know. I don't know what to do. Next on The Will Cain Show.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Coming up in about 15 minutes here on The Will Cain Show, former NFL player, frequent guest here on the show, somebody who's not afraid to tell me if he thinks I'm wrong, Bernard Pollard will join The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. I want to tell you something else about this Drew Brees situation. If you tune into sports media today, or if you scroll across social media today, you're going to come away with one particular impression. Wow, Drew Brees really did something wrong. Listen, I'm speculating here, but I'm going to tell you that is not the sentiment that is going to be widely held across this nation. Drew Brees, a man of action and charity and service, a man who's given away much of his life and his money to helping people and being there for the rebuilding of the city of New Orleans, a city that is 60% African American, being drugged through your social media streets and social or sports media platforms is not going to land well. That is my projection. It's not going to land well at all. It won't be the people tweeting at me who are mad at me today. It won't be the sports media writers high-fiving each other right now about their virtue and Brees's vice. For what it's worth, I would almost be willing to fund the research projects that looks at the charitable contributions of all of the sports media people who are condemning Drew Brees today. What have they done, not tweeted, in their life? But for now, what I'm telling you is, yes, it's my speculation, but if we enter another NFL season where this is at the heart of it and players want to embark on a protest that involves kneeling during the national anthem, this will be a crisis for the NFL once again. It will be a massive crisis. It'll be a business crisis. It'll be a public relations crisis. And the sad, sad thing I'm here to tell you is it won't be because people have a disagreement with the underlying issue. It will not. Everybody saw what happened to George Floyd, and almost everybody, right, left, black, white, was in agreement that something needed to be done. There's even, if not unanimous, I would suspect somewhat majority agreement that there needs to be some police reforms in addressing police brutality and the role that race plays in that. Not at every lockstep, line item, step of the way, but as a premise, an overall premise, and a to-do item, and let's seek solutions. I think you have a majority. But when it comes to making that point during the national anthem in front of the American flag, you can tell people that's not the intentions. But I'm just telling you as a realistic proposition, it won't land that way. It won't. And you can say, as my last caller Liz said, it's because they're ignorant or willfully ignorant. And you can give your reasons, but my projection is when you tell people that Drew Brees is a bad person, Drew Brees is the problem. When you chant F Drew Brees and you decide that kneeling for the national anthem in front of the American flag is the way to make your point, I don't think you will. I really don't. I think it will roll people backwards on political goals. And if you're a person who says, Will, I listen to you, but I disagree with you. And Will, this is my fight and I don't think you're in on the fight. You can dismiss what I'm saying as somebody who you think isn't in this fight with you. But I promise you, this is something I'm saying as I think really good-hearted advice, or I could be wrong, but I can promise you it's coming from the right place. That always is when I'm, that's what I always say. I promise you it's truth and how I feel, but it doesn't protect me from being wrong. It's going to be self-defeating politically, PR, and business-wise. And I think it will be a crisis for the NFL in a way that it supersedes even the coronavirus. I've already heard from one or two people today. I'll just tell you, aren't the most political people in the world and are big NFL fans. I've said this where 4 years ago people said I'm done with the NFL. that might have been for the most political who didn't love it anyway, this will be different. But hey, maybe they're all talk, and maybe I'm wrong. We may soon find out. I've got a few minutes left, so let's go to Benjamin in New Hampshire. What's up, Benjamin?
Hey, Will, how you doing today?
I'm good, man. I don't have a ton of time, Benjamin, so I want you to get to your point as quick as possible, please. I have a hard commercial break coming.
All right. Here's what I think. I grew up military. My family's been in the military probably since before the Civil War. I argue with my family, and my family argues on both sides of this thing every day, pretty much. I argue with the right of someone that my past history has died for the ability for people to kneel. But I also understand what it means to other people, and I know how people feel. I also know that what it means to empathize and what it means not to truly understand. I thought I could always empathize with someone who lost a loved one, but when I lost my little brother, I truly knew what it meant. And the fact of how you feel today about Drew Brees is how probably most Black Americans feel about how it doesn't matter what they do and how they do it right, they will always be vilified from it. I think Drew Brees is a wonderful person. I think the media does horrible things to people, and they latch onto the most important thing that they can think of to get them the most numbers. I think you should be judged on what you do, and not what people are saying that you do. But sadly, we're not educated anymore to think past beyond the next three steps, or even one step. Go ahead, sir.
No, I appreciate that. That's a very, I hate to use the word nuanced, but that's a good call. It's a good perspective. This is what I would say, man. Look, I got an hour left in this show. I've got some time left with you. As long as we do, we'll try not to do that thing that media does. We'll try to have, to hell with smart. It's a goal. It's not an end. We'll try to have empathetic. It's important. We'll try to have real conversations. That's my promise. Open and real. Because I truly, truly think it's what we want. And I truly, truly think it's not what we're getting. Let's do that with Bernard Pollard next on The Will Cain Show.
Thank you for listening to The Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.